Hi everyone, and welcome to a brand new episode of the SmackDown Summary, episode 26, where we cover the episode of SmackDown from January the 17th, 2017. I'm Kenny, joined as always for SmackDown by Sondra, who is pretty much married to SmackDown. Hi, Sondra.
Hi. SmackDown and I have a lovely relationship. Like, it gives to me, I give to it. It's a wonderful partnership. It's not like that abusive relationship that I used to feel that I had with wrestling when I was watching Raw on a regular basis. I feel like I've liberated myself from a bad situation. I go back to Raw sometimes. We can hang out, you know, we can have coffee. Probably not drinks. I don't know if we're at that point right now.
If Sami Zayn squares up to Brock Lesnar again, you two could go out for drinks.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, did that happen? I should probably check that out.
Yeah, he stood up to him.
That actually sounds really cool. Okay, fine, drinks.
And then you didn't see Bayley stand up to Charlotte?
No.
You didn't see Bayley cut an impassioned speech about why she loves wrestling?
I didn't. Is that something that I should watch, or is that something that was very bad? Because I've heard that it was kind of bad.
No, she was good.
Was it good? Okay.
Yeah. Much better than last week.
I didn't watch last week either.
I just meant the Stephanie segment that she had.
Oh, I did hear about that. Yeah, that sounded horrendous. No, I plan to check out little bits of Raw, but I definitely watched all of SmackDown because it was a delight.
Yes, SmackDown was a fun show, as always. It opened with Shane McMahon coming out. He had an announcement to make. He talked about the Royal Rumble coming up, you know, with all the notable names in it. And then he said that there would be the Elimination Chamber pay-per-view coming up in 4 weeks in Phoenix, where the WWE Championship would be defended on the line in the Elimination Chamber. Before we get to the rest of the segment, I thought there was a positive and a negative from this. I thought the positive is that it throws another spanner in the works for WrestleMania to mean that, like, we have no idea who's going to be champion or who's going to be challenging, which is fun because you get to kind of enjoy the ride. The negative for me is I think that having this kind of happen before the Rumble telegraphs that SmackDown's not really going to win in the Rumble.
Well, I mean, didn't I say that on the last SmackDown summary?
You did, but that was before they announced an Elimination Chamber before the Royal Rumble, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, the thing is, I didn't realize that the elimination... Well, I knew that it hadn't been, like, announced on the television program because I've been watching the television program, but I didn't think that it was, like, a secret. So when Shane McMahon said that he had this big blockbuster announcement, that news came out yesterday and it was like, oh my gosh, what's Shane's announcement going to be? And everyone's speculating that it could be something really, really cool, or it could just be, like, Shane entering the Rumble for some reason, which would have been stupid, and I'm really glad that wasn't it. The announcement being the Elimination Chamber is happening was kind of underwhelming for me, because I'm like, but you've advertised that the Elimination Chamber is happening. Like, you've already advertised it on your website.
The problem with it is that, like, I mean, right, let's be honest. We all kind of figure that somebody from Raw is going to win the Rumble anyway, because they have much more prominent names that could probably get in a story, you know.
Well, they're building their stories on Raw around the Royal Rumble. On SmackDown, it seems kind of like, yes, I'm going to enter the Royal Rumble, and a bunch of people are saying, yes, I will win the Royal Rumble, but none of the stories really hinge on it.
Exactly. So now the Elimination Chamber sort of tells you, you know, everybody now wants to be in the chamber, which is fine. You know, it's fine. I actually think Baron Corbin on Talking Smack was the one guy from SmackDown that actually seems like he wants to win the Royal Rumble, really.
Yeah.
But it's fine. I don't think it really takes away from my enjoyment of it. I know they've announced Jerry Lawler is going to be a commentator in the Royal Rumble match. I don't have as much of a problem with that now, given that SmackDown is essentially, you know, they're not saying it, but SmackDown is essentially saying, you know, we're not winning the Rumble, so we've got a pay-per-view, this Elimination Chamber, and that's where we're going to kind of put the title on the line, things might change, blah, 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 blah. Which is cool. Like, it's fine. I'm cool with it. And I'm looking forward to the Chamber. I think it adds a nice little air of uncertainty towards WrestleMania. I think the thing is, I just wish they hadn't hyped a huge announcement because, like you say, we kind of knew it was happening.
Well, that was kind of my issue, wasn't that the Elimination Chamber is happening. I'm fine with that. And I mean, I'll be honest, the whole concept of the Royal Rumble, I'm always torn on it because I really like the Royal Rumble as a match and as a concept, and it's always really exciting to see who's going to interact and who's going to throw who out, and you can set up new stories and that kind of thing, right? And I enjoy that about the Royal Rumble. But the whole premise of the Royal Rumble being for the number one contendership at WrestleMania and having a pay-per-view in between the Rumble and WrestleMania has always seemed annoying to me. Like, the concept of the Rumble kind of bugs me because you get the winner and then you're still supposed to have another pay-per-view where you set up title matches, which was always my problem when the Elimination Chamber was after the Royal Rumble in, you know, combined brand world, because it was like, okay, well, whoever wins the Royal Rumble, yeah, they're going to be in the main event and that's cool. But then how often are you going to change the title at the Elimination Chamber when you're building a feud from the Royal Rumble on? Does that make sense?
No, it does. The Rumble used to be, you know, guys like Bret Hart, Steve Austin, they would win and they would go on. And the thing is, like with Steve Austin, there was a pay-per-view in between, but the pay-per-view in between was just kind of a pay-per-view. You know, it wasn't, it didn't affect the main event of WrestleMania. Whereas the last kind of few years, the years that you were probably watching, you know, it was weird because like somebody would win the Rumble and then they'd be number one contender, then there'd be two chamber matches for both belts. And there was a lot of stuff going on.
Yeah.
Which is worrying, the fact they've got two pay-per-views between now and WrestleMania. After the Rumble, Raw has Fastlane, SmackDown has the Elimination Chamber. But I think overall, yeah, I'm intrigued by the Elimination Chamber, so I guess that's not too bad. But we did get AJ Styles coming out to interrupt Shane, because he's like, you know, why do I need to defend my championship in an Elimination Chamber after I'm going to beat up John Cena? Shane and AJ sort of go back and forth until John Cena comes down. AJ Styles kind of shuts him down, says, you know, your brother-in-law gifted you a title shot, complained again about the Elimination Chamber, and then The Miz would come out with the lovely Maryse, dressed fantastically, and Styles and Miz started sort of trash-talking each other. Miz had a great line saying that, you know, Miz beat John Cena before beating John Cena was cool, while Styles was growing his hair out looking like America's
Next Top
Superstar.
In the main event of WrestleMania, The Miz beat John Cena before beating John Cena was cool.
So Cena's instigating, kind of, you know, trying to pit them against each other. They're going, and eventually Shane makes a match right then and there with The Miz versus AJ Styles. What did you think of this opening segment in terms of kind of building the AJ Styles-John Cena match for the Royal Rumble and also building The Miz's story at the same time?
I loved it. I love the intertwined stories. And AJ Styles versus The Miz is something that I've kind of wanted to see. And I didn't really expect to get it on a random episode of SmackDown. But I was very excited to see it because The Miz has had this kind of chip on his shoulder about the fact that he brought the Intercontinental Championship out from obscurity and, you know, elevated it, right? And he's not wrong. I mean, who cared that much about the Intercontinental Championship before that, right? Like, because what was the progression? It went Kevin Owens had it, lost it to Zack Ryder at WrestleMania, and then the Miz won it
the next night.
The next night, had it for a long time, and then it went to, what, was Ziggler
Dolph?
The next one?
Yeah, I think it
right?
was Ziggler.
Miz had it for a long time. So yeah, then it was Ziggler, and then it was Miz, and now it's, you know, Ambrose or whatever, so fine. But I mean, The Miz did have the Intercontinental Championship for a long time, and The Miz was a very compelling champion with the Intercontinental Championship. So to make that claim, he's actually kind of right. And I like that. I like that The Miz is an absolute smarmy prick, and he's not a babyface in any sense of the word in the situation, but heels are best when they're justified in what they say, right? And AJ Styles, too, is like, why should I have to defend my title in an Elimination Chamber where I can't control what's happening, and there are, you know, six people in the match, and it's this brutal structure, and I'm supposed to be preparing for WrestleMania to be, you know, in the main event of WrestleMania because I'm the champion. And of course, AJ Styles would have a gripe with that because the Elimination Chamber is, you know, going to be unpredictable and it's going to be hard on him. And he, of course, assumes that he will still have that championship, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting. So I don't know. I like the interplay between them. I think John Cena was just a little shit stirrer here.
He was a very big shit starter.
He kept popping up behind everybody being like, you know, what do you think of that? Or, you know, I don't remember anything like exactly what he said, but I mean, he was definitely stirring the pot and just kind of
escalating. You're gonna let him talk to you like that?
Yeah.
It was fun though. It was a fun opening segment. I also liked that when you know, so we're going to get Miz and Styles as the opening to the show. But then Shane bumps into Dean Ambrose backstage, and Ambrose said that he wanted in the chamber, and then also said he wanted a new title belt, because his smells like cocoa butter and spray tan. And then Shane starts smelling the belt. He's like, oh God, that's horrible. Like, it was really good. It was fun. And then Ambrose.
To be fair, I mean, the belt could smell like worse things. Isn't it? Mick Foley has said that he has like Austin's old belt, so it smells like stale beer.
So you get the card you're dealt. Ambrose asked for a match with Randy Orton because of the beating that he took from the Wyatt family, and Shane made the match. So we got Miz and AJ Styles as the first match of the show. I'll be honest, it didn't blow me away, but I think that's mainly because, you know, we've been watching a lot of retro Raws when they were doing heel versus heel, and we got one of them here. And I think that while I like the idea of Miz and AJ Styles, I think I need more of a story between them for me to be more invested in them having a match. But it was fun. It wasn't that it was bad. It just didn't. I think I was expecting to be more gripped by AJ versus Miz than I was, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. I don't think that this was in a position to really be something that gripping or that compelling, because it was kind of just set up on a whim because John Cena was, you know, stirring tensions or whatever. So, I mean, it wasn't a match that had a big story coming into it. And the heel versus heel dynamic doesn't always work that well. I think it worked fine enough for me here. It was fun. It wasn't something that I was expecting to be a major classic, because there is a lack of a story and it's kind of a random TV match. So
it also works better given the fact that AJ Styles is essentially on the road to being a babyface. Like,
yeah,
he's on that. And then after the match, John Cena, you know, John Cena ends up kind of getting in there and causing the DQ. And then Cena ends up hitting the AA on Styles, and kind of, it reminded me of like the old John Cena of like, you know, I'm going to come in and beat up the champion and kind of be like, yeah, I'm winning the belt.
This felt very old school John Cena, except like, I mean, I don't even remember if John Cena was ever in the position to like cause a DQ the way he did here though, because he still seems kind of fired up about it. Like, what was it? AJ threw Miz into John Cena or something, and then John Cena like decked him. And so like he technically, I think Miz probably technically won by DQ, but I mean, John Cena kind of attacked both of them. So I don't know. It might've been a contest.
Miz,
I don't remember.
Miz won by DQ.
Okay. I wasn't entirely sure of the progression of events, but yeah, I mean, John Cena going in and then hitting the AA on Miz just to kind of like prove his point, because he doesn't like the Miz, but then also hitting it on AJ. I mean, John Cena did pick up the belt and everything. It was very old school John Cena, like, no, I want this now. I will have it. But it didn't bother me the way it would have like 3 years ago.
Because there's a story.
And there's still, I mean, maybe this is delusional. I'm sure David McCutcheon would tell me how delusional I'm being. But, I mean, chalk it up to enjoying the ride. And also, they've placed enough uncertainty into my mind that I don't know for sure who's winning at the Royal Rumble.
Well, I have a theory. My theory is I would be quite shocked if both the Universal and the WWE title both change hands at the Rumble. So I feel like one of them won't change. So I feel like maybe AJ could walk out with the belt.
I mean, I feel like it could be via shenanigans.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Total shenanigan ahoy, but yeah.
Like, you know, your dream, basically.
Well, shenanigans done right makes me happy. Shenanigans done wrong makes me sad.
Oh, and I love shenanigans done right as well. I mean, more on that later in the evening.
I do want to talk to you about this because it genuinely made me cackle with laughter. So we have Nikki Bella come out and she cuts a promo. And my mother, when I was younger, said, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So Nikki Bella cut a promo. Then
it wasn't as bad as I wish you died in the womb. I mean, she's gotten better since
if that's the comparison we're making, then I think you've proven the point. Like, it's better than when she wished her sister was dead. Well, okay, good. I'm glad we progressed. But no, you know, this was when Nikki doesn't sound like a human being. And then like Natalia is like And she's just randomly in the stands.
Yeah.
Which just makes me laugh. And Natalia, the only person worse at trying to sound like a human than Nikki Bella is Natalia.
Yeah.
So she starts speaking in the stands and, you know, banging on. And then she goes to the merch stand. Now, here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen. I have been to many WWE events. Sondra has been to many WWE events. We have seen the operation. I'm sure a lot of you have been to WWE live events. You've seen the operation of the merchandise stand, okay?
It does not quite look like this.
It does not look, but here's what there was. There were John Cena t-shirts, there were Nikki Bella t-shirts, there were Randy Orton t-shirts, and there was Bret the Hitman Hart t-shirts.
And The Undertaker.
And the why the fuck was there Bret the Hitman Hart t-shirts? Like, I don't get it. I don't understand why there was Bret Hart t-shirts. So Natalia, you know, Natalia was given a mic and able to run with it, which is, you know, you should be given 3 to 5 for that. But like, she ended up like trying to chuck like t-shirts in the bin and all this. But luckily, when Nikki Bella did turn up, they had a brawl that was quite fun. So the brawl kind of like, yeah, but I was laughing throughout because I just thought it was so, the promos were so funny because they were so bad. But then they actually managed to have a pretty fun brawl. So for me, it was fun and I enjoyed the brawl part of it. How did you feel about this Nikki and Natalia schmoz?
I loved this Nikki and Natalia schmoz, like 100%. I mean, you are not incorrect that Nikki and Natalia have trouble sounding like humans. They are not the best when given microphones and being told, you know, speak for a long time. I thought Natalia actually, and I didn't think Nikki Bella was like the worst here. Maybe because we've seen Nikki Bella be a lot worse and not just, I wish you died in the womb, but also most of the other times that Nikki Bella has tried to speak. I think she is getting better, and she's trying. Bless her. Like, she's trying, right? And, like, I like the fact that she's calling out Natalia, and I like the fact that she's angry. And I like the fact that Natalia here has basically just snapped and gone crazy. Like, appearing in the crowd where she did was just so random, first of all. And I was like, what is happening? And it just felt very unpredictable, I guess, and different. So I like unpredictable and different. And then when she's going to the merch stand and pointing out her ex-uncle Bret the Hitman Hart's t-shirt, which, you know, there's no reason for it to be there. You're so right. Like, why would there be a Bret Hart t-shirt other than
I just
than
saw
story?
It and I was like, why is there a Bret Hart t-shirt
so
there?
That I'm Natalia so can point to it and then try to throw it in the bin. That is why it was there.
Well, I mean, that's just, you know, that's a stretch.
Like, you it's know this. Stretch.
I know that's why I do know this. But I'm, you know, yeah. Okay.
But in terms of the actual real world and an actual real world merch stand, no. There's no reason for it to be there. Like, was there, I don't remember, was there even AJ Styles merch on that table?
Nope.
No, there was not. So, but Bret Hart, man, like, he definitely needs a spot there. But, I mean, I like the fact, though, that Natalia was like, where's my merchandise? You know, why do they have my uncle's merchandise and not mine? Because they should have her merchandise there. Like, why isn't it there? She does have a t-shirt, I think, still, right? She did.
I mean, you're asking the wrong guy. She has had t-shirts in the past.
She has had t-shirts in the past. And I think, you know, it's a valid question for her. And it seems like she's just kind of finally snapped and been like, look, I am not getting any recognition here. I should have my own TV show. It's the whole story that they've been telling, right? Like, Natalia feels overlooked and she feels like she's not getting her proper due. And it's making her go pretty crazy. And then I really enjoyed the brawl a lot. Like, going through that, you know, like, just decking each other on the tables and Nikki, like, just whacking a security guard and punching him and getting him out of the way. I loved that. I think their brawls the past couple weeks have been fantastic. So, yeah, I want to see them in an actual proper match and I want to see them fight and murder each other, basically. I think it's going to be really good. So I'm into it.
Yeah, I thought the brawl was really good. Really good, strong ending to the hilarious promos. We had the Wyatt family up next because we had Dean Ambrose versus Randy Orton. Big match for SmackDown.
Yeah.
This one went a fair amount of time. I think they got about 16, 17 minutes. And everything seemed to be going well. And then towards the end, Orton was about to hit a draping DDT. And then things kind of broke down because Luke Harper tried to get in the ring to get some revenge on Ambrose because Ambrose had sort of, you know, went for Harper earlier. Things broke down. The distraction ended up causing Randy to get rolled up by Dean Ambrose for the win. So Dean Ambrose beat Randy Orton. And then after the match, you see Bray Wyatt trying to separate Orton and Harper. He's trying to, like, you know, calm them down. They're coming to blows. And then Bray punches Luke Harper in the face. Luke Harper looks, you know, like he's about to cry.
Mm-hmm.
While Randy Orton's smiling smugly. But he didn't let Bray see that he was smiling smugly. So next week we now have Randy Orton versus Luke Harper under the instruction of Bray Wyatt. When this happened, I was like, okay. I mean, that's cool. But like, I was a bit like, would Bray Wyatt really set up a match with him? And then Bray Wyatt cut a promo and talking smack. And oh my lord, it was the best promo he's cut in a long time.
Because it mattered and had consequence, right?
He talked about, he even said, he was like, you know, The Undertaker claimed he was going to come back and kill us if we didn't win at Survivor Series. We did. We won. Now I want to win the Royal Rumble. I can't win the Royal Rumble while my guys are fighting, so my guys are going to get in the ring. You know, and he says to Renee Young, if you had a brother or a sister, you know, you have to settle things a certain way. You need to do it just the two of you. So they're going to fight next week, get out of their system, then we're going to go on to the Royal Rumble together, and the Wyatts are going to win the Royal Rumble. Bray Wyatt did really well this week. I thought that he's really carrying this story very well, and I'm all in.
Oh, I'm all completely in. I mean, I think I said on Twitter, I still get chills whenever I see the new Wyatt intro thing with Randy Orton in it, because I just love Randy Orton as a Wyatt so much. Which mm-hmm. is making this whole thing very heart-wrenching for me, because I'm so into this story, even though I did not want to be so into this story, because I've experienced Wyatt heartbreak before, right? But I'm so into this story, Kenny. It's so good. And Randy Orton and Luke Harper have had this tension between the two of them for such a long time. And I mean, you say everything was going well in the match, but Luke Harper tried to get involved a couple times, and Bray had to, like, keep him back. There was one moment where you see Bray holding Luke back, and I just got into my head, I'm like, I really wonder who Luke wanted to go and attack there. I wonder if he was going to try and help or harm Orton.
I was giving Luke Harper the benefit of the doubt that he was always going to try and help Randy.
I mean, I thought that he would, but the tension's been rising so much. It but has. Bray keeping him back, it means, like, he can have the benefit of the doubt, right? Like, we can assume that he was going to help Randy, but we don't know, because we don't know what's going on in his head. And we don't know what's going on in Randy Orton's head either. Because when Bray ended up hitting Luke Harper to be like, no, stop attacking Randy Orton, and, you know, like, stop fighting each other, boys. Did you see the look on Randy Orton's face?
Mm-hmm.
He could not have been more pleased with the situation. Like, is this just all mind games from the Apex Predator?
You sound like you're on commentary.
but that's I'm so into it though.
Yeah, no, I don't know. I'm very into it. I'm very into the idea. I think what I like the most about it as well is, you know, Luke Harper now has a bit of a purpose, Randy Orton's more interesting, and Bray Wyatt seems like he's actually got a purpose for his clan, you know?
Yeah, so. Absolutely. And I mean, just I don't know if they're even gonna necessarily, like, break up right away. I was very surprised to hear that we were getting Randy Orton versus Luke Harper next week, of all things. But this doesn't feel like a big blow off to a feud. Like, I feel like Orton versus
this
Harper
is supposed to be just like, right, if you guys want to fight and get your differences out, just do it now. Get it out of
here. Yeah. This is like, no, brothers, fight, get your, you know, settle your issues in the ring, and then we can move on as a family. Settle your tea kettles, says Natalia, who, by the way, has multiple shirts. I just looked it up. But I'm very curious to see where we move forward next week and what's all going to, like, the Elimination Chamber coming up after the Rumble. Like, I'm starting to get more excited for the Elimination Chamber than I am for the Royal Rumble, actually, because the stories seem to be leading there more than they seem to be leading to the Rumble itself. And I'm kind of curious if any of these guys are going to be in said Elimination Chamber, if they're going to have to fight one another in said Elimination Chamber. Wouldn't that be interesting?
Yeah, it could be fun. I think that the Rumble could pose some interesting dynamics for the Wyatts as well. So I'm keen to see what happens there.
Yeah, it's true.
We then have up next the Return of the King's Court. Ugh. With Jerry the King Lawler with his guest Dolph Ziggler. Now, I am someone who grew up watching the King's Court. Sondra has disdain for Jerry Lawler. We're all aware of this fact. However, I like Jerry Lawler for the most part. You know, I see some of the flaws. I do. But
they're hard,
you know,
to miss.
But I do like him for the most part. So I was quite excited about the idea the King's Court was going to come back, because back in the day, the King's Court was a really fun interview segment and blah, 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 blah. So the segment takes place in the ring, and then we cut to the ring, and Jerry Lawler is in his 1993 WWF gear.
No shirt.
He's in the old robe. He has just the pants and the tights, no top. And like, I know this is different for you, Sandra, because you don't really care, but like, I felt really sad, because I was like, it looks like if you imagine, like, you know, you see a movie or a TV show, and then like 20 years later, they go in like, I don't know, Jimmy Fallon or something, and put the old gear on. They just look really old and out of place. Like, when Mr. Belding did the Saved by the Bell thing on Fallon, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, like, Jerry Lawler looked so old in this gear, you know, because I don't think he should be wearing it. I think it's a shame that WWE felt the need to kind of humiliate him and put him in that gear, because they knew what they were doing, you know, putting him in that gear. Like, he could have worn his kind of Attitude Era gear or something. You know, had he worn the kind of jacket he was wearing at the Royal Rumble 97 that we just covered, something like that, that would have looked fun. But instead, he had to come out and just look like so old, you know, and like topless. It just, why?
Do you think it's WWE embarrassing him, or do you think like he just wants to still be young?
I think he wants to still be young, but I don't think he would have chosen that gear. I think he would have chosen his, you know, the jacket. Because, you know, there's a reason that he never wore that gear again. You know, and like, even the entire run he's had in WWF for the last 15 years, if he's ever wrestled it in, he's always had a singlet on.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, didn't he always wrestle in a singlet?
He did. So again, I don't really know why he was topless.
It's baffling. It was not the greatest idea.
No, and you know, see, he's there, and it's like, you know, it's quite sad, but like, okay. And then he brings out Dolph Ziggler, and Ziggler is kind of, you know, not really wanting to talk.
Talk about an exercise in sad. Topless Jerry Lawler next to Dolph Ziggler with his cry face on.
Oh, I know. And then, like, and the thing is, I'm an idiot because I didn't even see this coming.
You didn't?
No, I'd just forgotten that Dolph Ziggler was the guy in the ring when Jerry Lawler had the heart attack.
Oh, when I first heard that Dolph Ziggler was going to be Jerry the King Lawler's guest, I was like, I wonder if they're going to go there. Because that's all I could think of that they were going to talk about. Like,
well, and so it was midway through the segment, and I'm kind of, you know, watching Lawler trying to get some answers out of Ziggler.
Who wasn't speaking just, for a while.
Who wasn't speaking, and then it just hit me, and I was like, oh no, he was there during the heart attack, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And then Ziggler plays the footage. Ziggler said,
thankfully,
you know,
they didn't play the footage of Jerry Lawler having the heart attack.
Yes.
I was afraid that they were going to do the thing. Because remember how they replayed that on Raw, like, multiple times of him, like, keeling over?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, let's not show that. So they didn't. They just showed Dolph Ziggler, you know, giving Lawler the elbows that stopped his heart.
Yep, they decided to play that because that was apparently a good idea. So then Ziggler shows the footage of the heart attack, and then Ziggler said, you know, that he basically knew what he was doing, and that if Law didn't stop the questions, he would finish what he started 4 years ago.
So yeah, he just threatened to do a murder on national television.
Well, they just fucking glorified the murderer on Raw and Jimmy Snuka, the video package, so...
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
So he ended up, you know... But then Lawler came back with, you know, a logical question. He's like, you know, I've got one last question. You know, how does it feel knowing that no matter how many times you change your attitude, you're always going to be a loser? And then Ziggler gave him, like, a super kick to the chest, and Lawler kind of is gripping his chest. JBL slips and tries to get in to help Lawler. And then, like, Lawler shouting Ziggler. I mean, the positive to it is Ziggler seems like an absolute prick. which is good.
Yes.
I just don't know if... The thing is, like, I can't really be too mad because Jerry Lawler was clearly okay with using the cardiac arrest, you know? And he completely fine. So, like, it's not like it's like somebody's died and we're using them in an angle against their will and they don't know about it and blah, 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 blah. So, in that regard, I think it's fine. And I actually thought that Lawler and talking smack was pretty interesting, talking about the whole situation. So, if you've watched the SmackDown, if you've watched SmackDown, I think that watching Lawler on Talking Smack kind of adds to the story a little bit. But if this is one of the ways they want to show Dolph Ziggler being an arsehole, it worked because even I was like, oh, what a prick. You know, like, so, yeah, maybe it worked. What did you think of this, just the kind of idea of Ziggler using the heart attack and kicking an old man in the chest?
I mean, it probably would have been more effective if it were an old man that I didn't want to see get kicked in the chest.
Okay.
Because I don't like Jerry Lawler. Like, I really don't like Jerry Lawler at all. So it's difficult because obviously I don't want Jerry Lawler to die. Like, watching footage of what gave him cardiac arrest is, you know, like, it does make Dolph Ziggler seem like a prick. This segment wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be, but it's still... It would be very difficult to put on a segment with Jerry the King Lawler and Dolph Ziggler and have me enjoy it.
I'm kind of torn between whether I thought it was good or just didn't really accomplish what it... I guess,
like,
I
just don't know
where...
what it accomplishes other than, like, yeah, Dolph Ziggler looks like a prick, but I don't know if he looks like any more of a prick necessarily than he has the past couple weeks when he's just been, like, attacking people and being an absolute dickhead to them. Like, yeah, hey, so I almost killed you once, and hey, yeah, I totally knew what I was doing, and I want to finish the job, so I want to actually, like, murder you. Okay, like, I guess it's not that compelling because I'm not going to actually see him murder Jerry Lawler. And, I mean, is it just a way to be like, oh, yeah, and also Jerry Lawler's going to be back on commentary for Royal Rumble. Yay, get excited about that.
Well, you know, some people are excited about it, but, like,
I'm sure.
I think that, I mean, at first I was kind of like, why is he coming back to come to the Royal Rumble? And then I kind of got, oh, it's a royal thing and he's the king. And okay, I get it.
Yeah, but, like, that's the only reason, right? Like,
the thing that's weird, though, is, like, because Lawler actually did some pretty decent work on SmackDown before he left as a heel, you know, because he kind of went back to his heel persona from before. So I don't know if maybe he's going to, like, I think if he plays that role, it could be good. But I don't think there's much... and him kind of just coming back as the babyface legend guy.
Well, because if it's going to be Michael Cole, Corey Graves, and Jerry Lawler, though, and isn't Corey Graves supposed to be the heel commentator?
Yeah, so I guess Lawler's probably going to be in that.
So Lawler's
sort of
just
legend.
Replacing Byron Saxton, essentially.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess that's probably it. It's but yeah, I'm hoping that Ziggler goes somewhere from here and that it becomes... you know, he can use it going forward. Before we talk about the main event, though, I do want to say that...
Can I just say one more thing? Like, it seems like we're still on this downslide of Dolph Ziggler, and I'm curious to know if it's going to bottom out or if it's just going to be an exercise in depression.
It could be either, couldn't it?
Because, I mean, Jerry Lawler calling Dolph Ziggler a loser. And, I mean, like, it seems like it's very purposeful that he lost, you know, after he turned heel, right? Like, he lost that match to Kalisto. So it seems like we're still on the downward turn and we need him to snap even further or something. I kind of am hoping that comes soon because we've seen Dolph Ziggler lose for literally years of our lives. And I don't feel like he needs to lose for that much longer to really prove the point. Like, it's almost just a little too true that, yeah, you're kind of a loser, dude.
I do just want to say I loved Baron Corbin and Talking Smack, and, you know, actually I want to bring up a quick point that was brought up on Twitter earlier today by Callum Jock McDonald. I believe his name is actually Callum McDonald. He's added Jock in there, but, you know, who am I to say? And he did say something I thought about it after he said it, and I liked his point. He said, you know, something I really like about Shane is the respect he commands from SmackDown Live. No one in Raw respects Stephanie or even Mick at this point, but even Corbin, who is disdainful of everyone, respects Shane and Talking Smack. I think that is something that they're kind of doing with the authority figures on SmackDown in both Shane and Bryan, is that you know, they're there and they have opinions, but they don't let their opinions sway what they do.
Yeah, and even if they do make their opinions known, like Brian does on Talking Smack sometimes, he never gets the last word over the wrestlers.
Yeah, and I thought that, you know, we've had Shane on Talking Smack the last couple of weeks. I've quite enjoyed seeing a little bit more interaction of him with the talent. You know, that's been cool to see because we don't really get to see that too often. And I loved Baron Corbin's line when he was basically, you know, trying to talk about there's four guys in there that are saying they're going to go in and win. That's me, Goldberg, Brock Lesnar, and Undertaker. Like, putting himself in there with those names, that's great.
Well, I mean, the way he did it, he listed, like, you know, there's Goldberg, there's Brock Lesnar, there's The Undertaker, and there's me. Like,
and Goldberg and Lesnar.
I totally belong.
Yeah, and like Goldberg and Lesnar are going to be, you know, too preoccupied with each other. And then Undertaker's dug 29 holes. Well, good. We always need a gravedigger.
I loved that.
What a line.
Baron Corbin has been excellent lately.
Yeah, he's
done
really
well. Love his point where he said, you know, yeah, I'm going to win the Royal Rumble. And then I'm going to win the Elimination Chamber. And then I'm going to go out in the main event of WrestleMania, hold my title up and say, I told you so.
Yeah, it's simple, it's yet effective.
I love it.
So main event time is the steel cage match with Becky Lynch against Alexa Bliss. They get a pretty decent amount of time, but 15 minutes, and the fans were pretty into it. They were pretty into the match. It's the story has been going on, so people are kind of invested in how it's going. But of course, La Luchadora, or as one of my friends called it the other day, Dora the Explorer. It was, to be fair, it was Ross at What Culture, and he said, I wonder who Dora the Explorer is going to be. And I was like, what? And then I figured it out, and it makes me laugh. So now, to me, she is Dora the Explorer.
Oh,
but La Luchadora appears in the doorway, and you could see that it was a different person yet again,
yes,
portraying La Luchadora. But Becky Lynch was sort of powering through anyway, putting the disarmor on. But then La Luchadora entered the cage, kicked Becky in the face. Alexa then hit the snap DDT and covered Becky for the win. Afterwards, La Luchadora and Alexa Bliss were trying to beat up Becky, but Becky kind of overturned it. And then she pulled off the mask of La Luchadora, revealing the newest member of the SmackDown women's roster, Mickie James.
Hallelujah.
Hallelujah, the queen has come. And Becky Lynch stands there shocked. Alexa Bliss hits her from behind, and then Alexa Bliss and Mickie James stand over her with the women's title to close the show. This was really fun. This was really good, and I think that, you know, we've kind of come full circle from, you know, they had that match in Glasgow in November that didn't feel like a main event, and I don't think was big enough at that point as a story to main event the show. But 2 months later, they've built a story that felt that it was big enough to be a main event of the show and in a cage. So props to them.
I think there was nothing else on the show even close to worthy of main eventing other than this. And it was built up and it felt huge, right? Like, I mean, they had the intro video package at the beginning of the episode kind of highlighting their feud and highlighting the whole La Luchadora situation and, you know, dramatic music and cool visuals and all the good stuff that WWE video package makers should get a lot more credit for, by the way. Like, their video packages are just incredible and I love them. But then, I mean, you know, showing the cage being ominous, doing the dun 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 thing as the cage lowers, which is one of my favorite things. And I know it's one of your favorite things, like music to amp up the situation.
Oh, it's so good.
Like, it's so awesome. And then, I mean, the match itself, I really enjoyed too. I enjoyed the whole story of it. And I think, I mean, a lot of people have issues with cage matches when they're not super brutal. I don't think a cage match has to necessarily be super brutal to warrant being in a cage, because the story of this match warranted it being in a cage, right? Like, mm-hmm. It was to prevent outside interference. I do have a little bit of a problem with the way La Luchadora was able to just stroll in through the door, but I'll get to that in a little bit. But I thought Becky Lynch and Alexa Bliss used the cage very cleverly in some ways, like trying to escape it, especially. I like when Alexa Bliss did the monkey flip to Becky Lynch, and instead of you know, ramming into the cage, she was smart. She grabbed on and then started climbing and was like, thanks for giving me a boost, Alexa. Like, you've actually helped me here by monkey flipping me into this cage. And then, you know, Alexa Bliss had to be like, oh, crap. Like, I wasn't expecting that. Usually when I monkey flip her into a turnbuckle, it hurts and it doesn't help her in any way, shape, or form. But, you know, so they had to kind of alter their strategy that they would normally have in a regular match. And, I mean, I liked the spot, too, where Becky Lynch was like, props to her because she climbed at a reasonable pace every time she tried to climb out of the cage. And Alexa Bliss, that last time or whatever, when she just like grabbed a chunk of Becky's hair and that was the only way she could keep her from going over the edge. It's like, that's pretty brutal and desperate just to, you know, grab her by the scalp, basically. Like, that's gotta hurt. But so, I mean, I enjoyed what they were doing in the match, and I like the story still has been consistent that every time Alexa Bliss is in the disarmor, either she taps out or someone interferes. Because Alexa Bliss has never, like, successfully just gotten out of the disarmor. She's gotten to the ropes before, and we had that controversy, but she still tapped out. And this one, she would have had to tap out had La Luchadora not interfered. I guess my issue, and overwhelmingly I'm positive about this because I'm so excited about the reveal, and I'm so excited about the way it all played out. It all makes logical sense. I really wish that the cage door weren't a thing. And we've gone on about this before in Inside the Ropes history, how much we hate the cage door here, right?
Because we do. Well, like, the thing is, you have this cage match, and the whole point of the cage match is that La Luchadora can't get in. And she just walks in like she's going to a bus stop.
Right. Like, it would have been a very different for me. Because, I mean, we knew, right? Like, the story progression here is, oh, there's a cage to keep La Luchadora out. La Luchadora is absolutely interfering in this match. Like, 100% certainty, right? Because that's the way the story goes. That's the progression of it. And I absolutely expected that. And I don't have a problem with interference in cage matches if it's done cleverly, because that's kind of the whole point, is like how to figure out how to interfere even though there's a cage, right? And this wasn't even the standard interference where, you know, because of the dumb thing where the referee like opens the door on command. Like, I don't even understand why there is a door. Why isn't it just an open space?
Yeah, so the referee sees someone coming, goes, oh, would you like to go in here?
Okay. Yeah, because the whole point of the referee opening and closing the door is to keep people out, right? Because it's not to keep the competitors in, because every time the competitors want to get out of the door, the referee just opens it. But the referees are supposed to keep the door closed in case of interference. So if some woman is just, like, standing in the doorway, the referee should be like, no, don't do that. Instead of, oh, yes, would you like me to open the door for you so that you can get in this cage match? Or to get in this cage where the entire point of the cage is so that you won't interfere. Like, I kind of wish that they would have done it where La Luchadora, like, climbed over to get in or something. It would have made a difference for me. But it's kind of a nitpick because the end reveal is so exciting. Like, I'm really excited that it's Mickie James. I have no idea why Mickie James would be in league with Alexa Bliss. I can't wait to find out. Really want to tune in next week and find out. So, yeah, I mean, it's compelling, and I can't wait for eventual Becky Lynch, Mickie James matches, too, because those should be great.
Sorry. My only concern is that it's going to be, Mickie's going to have to do some stuff to get people to dislike her, because I think people are going to automatically want to like her. So, as long as they have some good stuff up their sleeve to get her to be a heel, then it's all good, but I think people initially are going to want to cheer her because she's like a legendary woman. But I think she's talented enough, and SmackDown's got good enough stories going on, they will be able to get her booed. So,
and I think they're doing it against the right babyface, because I think Becky Lynch is, out of all of the women on the roster, she's the one who's most likely to get cheered the most because people want to cheer her and not just because she's up against a bad guy.
Yep, 100%. And I could see Nikki Bella kind of coming to Becky's aid once she's finished with the Natalia thing.
Mm-hmm. Or even when she's not finished with it, maybe, you know, stories can intertwine for a week or two.
Yeah, it could happen. I feel that it's a redundant question for either of us to ask for a thumbs up, because this was a good episode, so we're both thumbs up, right?
Yeah, we're both thumbs up. I mean, like, well, I mean, unless you hated it for some reason, but I'm guessing that, you know.
No,
I
enjoyed it.
Thumbs up. I would say it's probably not quite as strong as a couple weeks prior, but the bar is very high. I think the King's Court segment, I won't lie, it dragged it down for me some, because I just thought that was a pile of stuff I just didn't need to deal with. But
well, I mean, the thing is, even apart from that, it wasn't really hugely effective for what it was supposed to do.
No.
You know,
like if it would have accomplished something and been effective, then like I probably still wouldn't have enjoyed it, but I would have like understood tolerated. Why it was there.
Yeah, it's but you know I think SmackDown's doing really well. Next week's the go home before the Royal Rumble, and we've got Randy Orton versus Luke Harper.
I'm not sure if I'm emotionally ready for that match.
We also have the final build towards the Royal Rumble for AJ and Cena. And yeah, it should be fun. I'm excited.
Yeah, I'm excited too, definitely. And I mean, Royal Rumble coming up, I'm excited for the Royal Rumble as a pay-per-view. I'm pretty stoked to see what happens with John Cena and AJ Styles. But I kind of like that SmackDown right now is telling so many stories week to week. It's actually progressing things week to week that I don't feel like we just have to get to the pay-per-view or we just have to get past the next pay-per-view for something to happen, because stuff is happening all the time, which is how I like wrestling to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah. You know that. Part of the reason I haven't been as keen on NXT as much as, you know, in the past is it seems so takeover to takeover, and the stuff in the middle doesn't matter so much. Like, it's gotten better again. There's stuff on there that I like a lot now, but it seems on SmackDown especially, I feel like I have to watch SmackDown because I don't want to miss what has happened.
Yeah, that makes sense. But yeah, SmackDown's building towards the Rumble, they're building towards the Chamber, they're building towards Mania, building towards lots of stuff, mm-hmm. and it's good. Just throw in a quick Patreon plug. You can go to patreon.com/insidetheropes to get more content. Sandra and I have done a Royal Rumble 97 retro pay-per-view review. We also did a Royal Rumble 2001 last week. David and Robert have done a Wrestle Kingdom 11 review that is 3 hours long. So please go and check that out. The return
it's getting very
of
good reviews.
It is. And we'll be back later on the week with Retro Raw from the fallout from the Royal Rumble of 1997. Sandra, where can people find you on Twitter?
Find me on Twitter at SandraRuthRW. Find Kenny on Twitter at KennyMC1985. Follow Inside the Ropes at Inside_the Ropes. And patreon.com/InsideTheRopes for all that bonus content that Kenny was just mentioning. And more to come soon.
More to come. Yeah, so thank you very much. We will be gearing up. We're having a little bit of a quiet spell on it just now because I'm pretty sure when the Royal Rumble hits, it's going to be the busiest 2 months of the year, as it always is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all looking good. So a fun 2.5 months coming up. So we will be back soon. Thanks for all your support. Thanks for listening. And look out for a couple of tour announcements next week as well.
Dun, dun, dun. So excited. Dun, dun, dun.
Bye, guys.
Bye.